You are listening to the Consumed Electronics Show, the Furla Bros Tech Podcast. Tuesday.
Yeah. So, and my favorite part of Tuesday, or so by Wednesday, the first article for Best of CES was already released, which I guess makes sense. I mean, if you've ever gone to a trade show, it's not like different vendors show up every day. So everybody had already had a chance to kind of walk through and see all the different products to some degree. But the articles are going to keep leaking out, and so we're going to keep going day by day. This, to me, one of the biggest products of the next few years got announced on Wednesday.
Whoa, that's a big deal.
Yeah. But we're not going to talk about that till the end of Wednesday. I just wanted to tease that one, just drop that in there for you. So one of the cool products that got launched, you know, there's all these gesture things that are out there, your Leap Motion, stuff like that, you know, trying to get high quality gesture control built into it. This company came up with a pretty clever solution because it costs $20. Basically, it's this little like ring thing that's got three dots on it. You clip it between your fingers, and the camera just can track those. So you build APIs into your game or whatever.
Okay.
It tracks it, and they showed different games you could play with it, different music stuff that you could do. Seems to work pretty well. One of those, you know, really clever little, we're going to leverage what's already available on your iPhone, and we're going to allow you to do what you want to do for cheap. It's one of those products that because you have to build the API into the app, you can't just build it on top of whatever. It'll never turn off. But it's so cheap that if you had an app that was worth, you know, a couple of bucks, you could tell people to go out and buy it, and they would buy it, and they would use it. Of course, it's so simple that you probably would figure out a way to, you know, build one out of popsicle sticks for free at home.
Right.
But it's one of those, you know, it's cool because it's actually the sort of thing that it fits better in the Android ecosystem because you can add that on top of, you know, on a deeper level of the UI. It's not like, you know, iOS, if you don't build it into the app, it's not usable. Whereas with Android, you can, you know, if you can actually build apps that could leverage, you know, you could are using that instead, which is kind of cool. So, you know, as a piece of technology, it's cool. Vizio, they basically announced all their Ultra HD TVs. This is a big deal because Vizio is
Ultra
like your
HD.
Yeah, that's correct. So notice that we didn't say 4K, so it's the wrong aspect ratio, of course, Vizio, jeez.
The title has 4K in it. They just weren't sure. Vizio's 4K Ultra HD TV.
If you remember, I said 4K has kind of taken on this meaning of a certain pixel density, as opposed to an aspect ratio. Originally, it meant an aspect ratio. So if it's just 4K, it's the right aspect ratio. If it's Ultra HD 4K, it's the right pixel density with the UHD, whatever, it doesn't matter. So basically, you got to pay a G to get one of their 4K TVs, but Vizio is like,
right? No.
It is actually for a 4K TV. And
50 inches.
I could say it starts as a 50. I mean, a 50-inch TV is not cheap. You're paying $500 now. Double the number of pixels. That's
$1,000.
Yeah, dude, it gets there fast. The reason why this is so huge, though, is because Vizio is like your number one seller of flat, you know, or not number one, but they're one of your top screen guy, you know, screen sellers in the U.S.
Wow.
I fumbled all over that sentence. But they didn't have any offerings up till now. And so now it's like, now everybody looks at this as like, okay, it's real. It's here. Vizio's doing it. That means everybody's doing it. I mean, if you've ever walked into the Target, so that you can get your, information stolen, their TV sections, like half of them are Vizio's. I mean, that's the reason why so many TVs in America are Vizio TVs, because Target, like, sells like 75% of their TVs are Vizios. It's crazy. So if you're buying your TV at Target, like a lot of people do, it's probably a Vizio. So this is one of those ones where it's really moving into your mainstream, which means that as you know, your content providers, your Comcast and whatnot, are going to get to the point where soon they're, I think they're going to be willing to do 4K TV, not just Netflix and YouTube. I think it'll be interesting when Apple finally gets on board, because I don't think they can put it off for long. I don't think they want to put it off for long, but they just haven't done anything yet for actually offering, you know, super high definition TV or video through iTunes. I think it's just because they don't have any content yet. But I bet it comes soon. Samsung, they showed off their, on Wednesday, they showed off their 98-inch 8K TV. Once again, they said the content was weird because it was like, yeah, it was ridiculous in that you could like put your nose up to it and still couldn't see all the details.
Wow.
But, I know. But they're like, but the content was just, it was like a picture of a mall. It wasn't anything. It was just, you know. And they were like, it was kind of weirdly. And what they do is they like show like zoomed in pictures of what you were seeing so that you could see the detail that you couldn't see. They said it just wasn't a very good display, was what they were arguing, but
a good demo, you mean?
That's what I meant. Thank you. It was a fantastic display. It was a bad demo. So
what? I just love it, man. We haven't even done 4K yet, and we're already on 8K.
I know. And what's really fascinating is because 3D didn't work is the reason why they're pushing it like crazy. Is they're like they think. TV, what's really happened is they feel like they've saturated the market of TVs, especially 1080p TVs. Your HD TVs, like everybody has one. The sales are just falling off. Sales are falling off a cliff, and the only reason people buy them anymore is because, you know, and they last too long. It's craziness. So it's like trying to pick up TV sales again. They got to come up with the next big thing to get everybody excited. And guess what? It's working. I want one really bad. So this is the sort of thing, this next product is the sort of thing that gets me super stoked, because 3D printers have this problem of durability. You know, there's cool different use cases for them. They kind of make sense, but for consumers, they don't necessarily, they're too expensive for just your run-of-the-mill consumers, and they're not really strong enough to make sense in most industrial application. If you're not getting one of your super expensive $10,000 ones, you know, your sintering laser furnace ones. But there are use cases that make sense. And there's a company that has come out with one that I think is actually going to really start helping build momentum. And basically what it is, it's a 3D printer that prints sugar. And what I love about this product
prints
is that...
sugar.
Yeah. What I love about this product is it's expensive, but, you know, you're not going to buy it for your kitchen. It's going to be, you know, confection restaurants. And, you know, it's going to be restaurants. It's going to be Disney corporations. It's going to be, bakeries that can treat it as a capital expense, like buying a giant mixer or buying an oven. They're going to be the ones that are going to be buying this product, and then they're going to be able to use it to its like full potential. And one of the big deals here is that a lot of aftermarket, you know, modifications people have tried to make to 3D printers to try to build 3D sugar printers, and nobody's had success doing it aftermarket. So this is cool because somebody figured out how to do it, and they turned it into a product, and they kind of surprised everybody. But, you know, the easy use case for this one is that, like, somebody walks up to you with their Microsoft Kinect, and they, you know, with its new APIs that allow them to just walk around you in your tuxedo, and they take a 3D model of you, a color 3D model of you. They load you up into their Windows 8 Microsoft tablet PC, and then they, you know, using whatever software that Microsoft has, they print you out on this thing, and they actually print out a little, you know, model of you in a tuxedo for your wedding cake.
That's cool.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool. Or like, you know, sugar Mickey Mouses to go on top of, you know, their castles. If you're a Disney corporation and you can afford that, and you have the copyright. Mm-hmm. you know, it's one of those things where it's like, this is cool because it's like, it's a product that will show people the potential of it, the reason why it'll allow people to exercise their creativity, and it makes sense in what it is it's, you know, it's not designed to be structural. It's not designed to be super durable, and it meets the technology where it's at. So I'm super stoked on this. I think this is the, in my opinion, of all the 3D printers that got announced, this is the other big deal one. This is the huge, you know, takeaway. So
edible printing.
Oh baby. Now that, if HP could do, that'd be awesome, man.
Maybe they can. Maybe they can't. I'm not saying.
Nobody knows. It's an unknown unknown. I know you're going to like this one. Home automation stuff. Revolve goes on sale. They just announced. Basically what it is, it's a little computer, a little Wi-Fi enabled computer that runs. It's kind of cool. Basically, you know, in your house, you've got your Nest apps, your Nest hardware, whether it's your, you know, smoke detector or your thermostat. What's that one company that does the locking mechanism that you have?
Locktron.
You got your Locktrons. You got your different light bulb companies out there that doing different light stuff. And basically, in order to run them all, you need different apps, and it's kind of annoying because they all have different apps they're all running on. Well, Revolve kind of solves the problem. Basically, what it is it's this device that is designed to link to all of these different systems. It effectively just has the different apps running on it, and then it pushes all that information to you as an app. So it kind of integrates everything, brings it all together, sits in your house, and you can, you know, it connects over Wi-Fi, so you can use it anywhere. And so the big idea on Revolve is that it is, you know, it's designed to, you know, really solve the problem of how do you have a single integrated house. I don't think Revolve is the final solution to it all, but I think it's the idea is a good one, and I think will be probably a foundational idea for, you know, in 10, 20 years, how this all works together, or something like that, where, you know, everyone will build their own thing with their own APIs, and then you'll have one central computer that kind of links it all together. And then that connects to your phone. So pretty clever. T-Mobile announced a new plan that a lot of people question whether it's legal or not as well. But it sounds like they're probably going to get away with it where AT&T won't. Basically, though, they want to pay your early termination fees. So let's say you're on a family plan with AT&T and y'all wanted really cool smartphones, so you got 2-year contracts with when you got your new phones. But everybody doesn't normally get on to the plan at the same time.
Right.
Some people hold on to their phones. Some people upgrade their phones early, and
some people have them replaced multiple times.
Yeah, but that hasn't cost anybody anything. Okay, that's no new contracts have been signed. The long and short of what ends up happening is, effectively, because everybody's on these 2-year plans, but they're staggered, everyone's kind of locked in. So if your contract comes up first, you have to wait until everybody else's contract, you know, is over before you can jump ship.
Right.
And it's been viewed as this sort of like sneaky way that AT&T and Verizon have locked you into into an infinite cycle of staying with them. And it's funny, you know, we as a family aren't really struggling with that, but other families in our family I know are. T-Mobile has come up with a solution. They basically said, look, we'll pay for it.
Aggressively going after users, aren't they?
I know. It's crazy. It's awesome, dude. This is like, it's starting to get exciting. And in that, you know, that competition that we've all kind of wanted, it's happening.
It's like they're number 4 and they're sick of being number 4. And
they tried to get bought by
3 or whatever it is.
Yeah. They tried to merge with AT&T. And FCC basically said you can't do that, and they said fine. It was weird. It was like they gave up, and when they realized they weren't even allowed to give up,
They were just like, okay, you know what? It's time to start fighting, and I'm glad to see it. And so basically what they said is if you're on one of those plans, what you do is you cancel your plan, you give all your phones to T-Mobile, they get to sell them, and you sign up for their service apart from buying new hardware. You buy new hardware through them, so you get your new phones on their 2-year like payoff plan. So effectively, right, you get a new 2-year contract with everybody on the family plan, and then they will at that point, that's what I'm looking for. When you get your like final thing with AT&T, your final bill where you actually pay the termination fees, you forward that to T-Mobile, and T-Mobile will then send the check to AT&T and take care of it. People have asked how in the world they can afford to do this, and they say that because they think on average, they did the math, I think on average it's not going to cost them more than a couple hundred dollars per person or per family. And I think it was $150 per person. And they said they think the phones that they're going to be getting are worth that much that they're going to be able to sell. And if it doesn't make sense in the short term, in the long term it will make sense. So it's worth the expense up front. So
they're taking a bet.
Yeah, sounds cool. I wish I could get into that that game with them, but whatever. And then, so this is the one that I think in 10 years, this is going to be one of those ones that actually is a really big deal that nobody's been paying attention to. The reason I think it's a big deal is because everybody's trying to build one. And you've got all these different companies that are trying to basically do what Intel stepped up and did. And Intel's the kind of company where they've got unbelievably genius engineers, and they've got unbelievable manufacturing capabilities. Just it's inconceivable. And so basically they took what I really love. I actually love what's going on at Intel right now, because there's been this sort of the collapse of the Wintel PC, and Intel's been trying to figure out what to do next, and they have not been resting on their laurels, unlike Microsoft. And they've been basically looking at what people are doing in the microprocessor realm, and you can tell they spend as much time on Kickstarter as anybody, and basically going, okay, what clever things are people doing? Can we do it better than them? And the answer is always yes.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. And the answer is almost always yes, because they may not come up with the idea first, but they know how to do it with less energy for cheaper and more powerfully. And basically what they've come up with is what is called the Edison. You know what the greatest part about it, too? This is ridiculous. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is what I've read. The thing was codenamed Tesla.
Ha!
And everybody's like, literally, Tesla did it first, and then it came out as they liked the marketing name Edison better, though, which is just like, oh, you guys, that's terrible.
Oh, classic.
Basically what it is it's a computer. It's an all-in-one SoC. It's a system on a chip. I'm going to just read it to you. Intel are hoping this tiny computer will be used by small manufacturers to endow their products with connected smarts and sensors. Intel thinks the Edison could be a breakthrough technology for the Internet of Things, and is hoping that computers are used in wearables after its release in mid-2014. The miniature computer comes with a dual-core CPU, 500 megabytes of RAM, and runs on Linux, the long-standing open-source operating system. It also boasts some respectable connectivity and supports both Wi-Fi and low-powered Bluetooth standards. One of the big things that they showed off, and this was actually very well-received, was a onesie for toddlers that this would plug into, and so that you could track your baby, and that was pretty cool-sounding.
Have you said how big it is yet?
No. It's the size of an SD card, which is incredibly small.
That is pretty small to have all of that.
Yeah, yeah. 500 megabytes of RAM, dual-core CPU.
It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And this thing, I mean, what? You know, you talk about expandable memory. You could put, like, expandable computation into stuff. I mean, and because it's so small, it's going to be so cheap. It's just going to be, it's one of those things. And what's great about this is it's basically, they're sitting there, we wanted to build something that was so small that you could build a computer in anything. And this is, you know, when you look at what companies that, you know, when you look at what Arduino is trying to do, and you look at what different companies on Kickstarter are trying to do, and what they're trying to build is they're trying to build integrated stuff for your clothes, for your, you know, for your wearables, put the computers in everything. I mean, like, when you talk about the Internet of Things, the real important part is that everything needs a computer. And Intel figured out how to do it. Yeah, it's really exciting. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's a big deal. And what's awesome about it is they're like, it doesn't make any, you know, what other operating system are you going to put on other than Linux? You know, and so it's just these tiny little computers, and I don't know. It's exciting. It's really exciting. And it's like, and part of the reason why I don't think it's, you know, people really got jazzed about it is because it's not a viable product. It's an idea, and it's a foundational piece of hardware. But I think, you know, I think very soon you'll see people start buying them, trying to figure out what to do with them. And you'll start seeing them be the foundational piece of technology, the cornerstone piece of technology for Kickstarter projects. And, you know, you'll start to see more and more people get used to using them and figuring out how to use them.
And all of a sudden
in 5 years, you know, when you actually have, you know, Edison's that, you know, the Edison 5 that has a gig of RAM and, you know, quad core 64-bit architecture, you know, whatever, you know, ridiculous things, you'll realize that how did this all happen? You know, when did we start building computers into literally everything? And this was it. This was the microprocessor that's going to allow us to do that. And it's not because they're doing anything radical. It's just that other than what they do, which is make them the best, the lowest power consumption and cheap. And, you know, nobody does that like Intel does that. And it's cool. Very cool. Very exciting. So that was Wednesday, and obviously didn't win the best of CES, as I pointed out, but I don't even remember what did I say won best of CES? Best software was PlayStation Now. Oculus was the best hardware, but blah, 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 blah. Shoot. I did not even get an article on the Steam machines. That was like the one thing that's weird. I totally skipped over that, which is weird considering the fact that I spent like an hour reading about all the different Steam machines that got announced. And part of the problem with them is they're all really expensive. The cheapest one is $500. You're like, guys, like the promise of the Steam machines was competition, open source. They'd be less expensive than the Xbox and PlayStation. But no, they're all pretty much without exception more expensive, which is just craziness. And so
for now.
So it sounds like I will not be getting a Steam machine this go around, unless I build it myself, which I probably won't. And kind of a bummer, but you know, it's everybody seemed really impressed by the hardware. They looked cool, so I got that going for them, I guess. But blah blah blah. So Thursday. So I'm really loving my Apple TV. Very cool little product. Especially for its AirPlay ability. Mm-hmm. You know, moving music, moving all sorts of different things. Well, if you're not part of the Apple ecosystem and you want that, there are now options. AirTame wireless dongle. Basically, it's kind of like the Chromecast, except it's all it does is mirroring of your computer. You plug it in through HDMI, you give it a little bit of power, and then over the Wi-Fi, it will mirror your PC.
Nice.
Yeah. Costs like $80, $90, something like that. $89.
$89. Wow.
Yeah. And
it tells you how good of a deal Apple's is.
I know.
And the Chromecast, yes, for that matter.
Yeah, seriously. It links your PC, be it running Windows, OS X, or Linux, to whatever display is plugged in over Wi-Fi. Installation of Breeze, all you need on the PC side is the software. And from there, you can choose which dongles to beam your screen to. Yes, dongles, because you can beam one PC to multiple screens, thus beating Miracast. We also played a game on one of the laptops, and the response time on the remote display was surprisingly good. You know what that means? It means it wasn't actually good. It was just surprisingly good. And you know what that – and the reason why they said it was surprisingly good is because it's probably tremendously better than the Apple TV. I mean, the one thing with the Apple TV is it only really works as a mirroring thing. You know, as an extended desktop for certain uses, it makes sense. But it the latency is pretty hardcore if you're for like gaming. It's unacceptable for gaming, and the reason is because you go from your Mac to your router back to the Apple TV. So if your router's a little bit slow, there's a huge bottleneck there. And but just the fact that it's going to bounce around slows it down.
Right.
That's not what it's designed for. Whereas this guy, I think it's ad hoc, so it connects directly to it. So that improves it a lot. But the problem is that if it's not, you know, perfect, you can't play games on it, you know. And so, you know, it's one of those things where it's not completely worked out. It's getting better. But definitely for playing movies and stuff and turning things, you know, if you got your laptop and you just want to be able to throw a movie up there really quickly, you know, pretty cool. Sounds like it'll work. And like you said, though, Apple TV is absolutely a killer deal, and so is your Chromecast. So, you know, interesting. It's cool to watch them, but I don't think it's going to be huge.
I think the idea that you could go to multiple monitors is interesting. I know that, you know, like, yeah, I think that's interesting, and oftentimes it's a hard one to try to figure out how to do. So that in itself, I could see for presentations and stuff, could be pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I am not. What I want to see, honestly, is I want to see this integrated into the monitors and TVs. That's ultimately what I want. I want to see some open, you know, some standard communication protocol, and every screen be built with Wi-Fi into it, so that just automatically comes, you know, par for the course.
Mm.
You know, that's what I want. You know, obviously this is a good, and then all of your dongles, all they'll have is they'll have whatever that standard protocol is. They'll just be up to that, and then it becomes, you know, they're all commoditized because they all work. They're all Wi-Fi using the same communication thing, you know. And but I think we're a ways off from that. But that's where we go, I believe.
Yeah.
And then, so another app that stumbled upon on Thursday, it's called Confide. I think this is kind of cool. They basically describe it as a grown-up version of Snapchat.
You sent me a message for this.
I know. So
I didn't open it.
Thanks.
I had to sign up, and I was just not in the mood.
Yeah, I understand. This is kind of cool. It's just like Snapchat. You get sent text messages. You get sent a text message, and then you can read it there. You get to look at it as long as you want, but as soon as you go away from it, you can't get back to the message. It's gone. It sounds like they're taking the steps that Snapchat doesn't take to protect it, where it actually gets deleted. It sounds like it doesn't pass to their servers, but I'll bet it does. But they really want, what they want it to be is they want it to be used for really and truly for private text message conversations, and for business level, you know, communication. They don't want it to be, you know, a toy. It sounds like they like the idea of Snapchat, but don't trust it and don't think it's good for what they want to use it for. So they built something that they could trust and that was simple to use. But what's really cool about it is, you know, one of the problems with Snapchat is the whole issue of taking a screenshot. You know, you can take a screenshot of the picture. You can notify the person that there's a screenshot, but still that picture is now there forever. What are you supposed to do about it? Well, how they solved the problem is they basically redacted the entire text message. So when you open up the text message, it shows up with each word blanked out with just like an orange blob over it. And then you tap it, and the word is revealed, and you just run your finger along, and you read it as it goes along, and then as you go over it, once your finger leaves it, a couple seconds later, it covers back up. So you can't read the entire message at the same time. You have to take multiple,
screenshots
of it, and at that point, you might as well just write it down. Which is clever. It's actually a really clever way of kind of like, you know, it's obviously not perfect, but it's pretty good. And I'll use it. Probably nobody else will use it, but I think it's cool.
I just, as a general rule, I try not to say anything that it needs to disappear right away.
Yeah, me too.
I know, not as fun.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, I've had conversations before where I've literally, where I literally started to – I wanted to say something on, text something to somebody and realized, I really shouldn't say this over text message because I don't know who's listening and I don't want to, it's just not worth it. And I'm definitely not going to say what those conversations were being recorded on by Google.
Oh, man.
But, whatever. I'm not saying I want to run for prison one day, but I also don't want to preclude it just because I decided to send a text message. Akros, they're a French company. I don't know how to say their name. Achros. Akros. They came up with kind of two cool products on Wednesday as well. They came up with a smart watch, and it's super simple. One of the reasons there are tons of smartwatch, tons of different trackers, but I'm bringing you the ones that I think were cool. This one's cool because it's got a battery that lasts for like 6 months. I mean, it's like a full-on, just has a just regular old battery in it. It has Bluetooth, but it's just super simple in that it's like a watch that gives you notifications. It doesn't have like a full-blown e-ink LCD screen, or the most expensive one does, but the cheaper ones don't. They have like regular old, electric watch screens. And so it's not really customizable. They're not little smartwatches. It's basically just a very simple, hey, it alerts you, gives you your alert. It's a watch with Bluetooth alerts. And the battery lasts a super long time, and they don't look super ugly. It's kind of cool. It's not touch capacitive, whatever, it's got buttons on the side. It's one of those ones where it's like, if you already had a watch and you want a digital watch and you just wanted to give you notifications, this is a good solution. I bet they actually sell quite a few of them. Probably not in America, but I bet there are places where people will go out and buy them and buy quite a few of them. They also came up with it's a similar solution to the last home automation thing, where it's kind of a central piece of hardware for all of your different Bluetooth connected devices. But it's like a tablet, and so you can look on, you can actually use this tablet for your home automation. It also it's like security and different sensors and stuff. It's kind of cool. It's just one more of those home automation solutions that's coming out and looks neat. And it's, highly integrated.
So what are some of the things that
doors, lights, temperature, pressure, weather outside.
It controls the weather outside?
It watches it. It also... Also, video camera, motion sensors,
bunch of stuff.
It's thought of, and they're pitching it as this kind of all-in-one security home monitoring thing. There was another, there's another product. Oh man, Fridays. We got to get there. It's super cool. So those are Acros. But Cuckoo came up with a smartwatch that I think I actually would be interested in. It's a super minimalist approach to it, which is kind of why I like it. It's basically just an analog clock, with a bunch of LEDs on it, and different alerts light up different LEDs, and they're basically like, all it does is let you know that you got something going on in your pocket, so pull out your phone. They're like, we don't think there's a phone solution, or there's a phone replacement solution that we like, so basically we're just putting the alert on your watch. Because it doesn't have a motion tracker in it, I won't get it, but it looks really cool, it looks really slick, it's a good design, and it kind of brings your, like I said, it's a minimalist approach, so it brings your kind of old school form factor together with some new school technology, and looks pretty cool. And then another piece of technology that I'm super stoked on, I want one, is the Faraday bike. It's an electric bike, man. This is good. It's an
electric bike.
Yeah. It's an assistive electric bike.
Like a Whizzer, but electric?
Yes. Yeah, exactly, actually. So, I mean, it looks sweet, dude. This thing looks like a real bike. You can't even tell that it's an electric bike. It's got the motors, like, built into the hub of the front wheel. It's got, like, a sweet spoke. It just looks really cool. The batteries and all the control cables are built into the frame. Whoa. So there's no, like, disgusting batteries hanging everywhere. The only way that you can tell that it's really not a normal bike is that right underneath the seat is this little extra kind of large area. If you go to the website, check it out. It's a cool little product. But that's basically the computer that does, you know, let you know what's going on. It's funny. It actually was they put it in the e-ink part of the trade show because it has this little e-ink display on it that tells you, like, you know, how much it's helping you. Right. It was like, yeah, you're like, that's, I guess technically it's e-ink. But it's a cool bike, man. It is very, very cool. And they said that it, like, and basically it's assistive, so it never, like, pedals for you. The whole point of it is that it's supposed to, you know, it recoups when you don't realize it, and, you know, recoups power when you don't, you know, like, when you're braking and stuff, just really, you know, really simple. But most importantly, like, when you're pedaling, it just sort of, like, you know, you get stronger and stronger, and it gets easier and easier, but you can't really tell because it's working with you. They say it's really, really smart that way.
I like it's got fenders. It could work for me.
I know, dude. And it's like I said, man, check it out. Like, is that not a sweet-looking bike?
It's not a sweet-looking bike.
What? No, is that not a sweet-looking bike?
Yeah, isn't that what you said?
No, you said it's not a sweet-looking bike. Do you not think it's a sweet-looking bike?
It's okay.
Oh, you don't like it?
It's all right. It's okay.
Oh, that hurts, man.
Sorry.
I like it. I think it looks really cool.
Actually, I think it would be fun to try, what is that bike called? It's where you actually are sitting in a regular seat with a backrest, and you're down low, and you're pedaling in front of you. There's a term for it. It's a type of bike style.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I can't think of it right now. But I'd like to try that to see if I would like it. No, I thought about getting a Whizzer when we moved to Albany because I went into Corvallis enough, and I was like, oh, that'd be cool to be able to ride my bike. But I was like, I don't want to have to pedal the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I did a little bit of research into it. There's no safe roads to ride my bike to and from Albany, which is the bummer part. But yeah, something like that would be pretty cool because, you know, it actually would – because theoretically if I did it, it'd be like an hour bike ride, and this would come down to, you know, 20 minutes theoretically.
It's true. It is true.
And then so, I could actually keep up with traffic.
The one downside to this thing, if you could call it a downside, so after the $200 deposit in order to secure the next run, you get one built. Uh-huh. You would then have to go on to pay another $3,300 to actually get the final product free, total cost of
$3,500, clocking in at the price of quite a few used vehicles. So it's not cheap. But
well, from a bicycle standpoint, that's actually pretty reasonably priced.
What?
What?
Really?
Yeah.
For like Tour de France bikes, right? I mean,
well, for mountain bike, I'm thinking mountain bike stuff.
How much does a mountain bike cost? I haven't looked into bikes in so long.
You could have forks that cost that much.
$3,500 for forks?
It's from what I understand. Obviously, I don't spend that or do that, but yeah, it's not uncommon to have a $10,000 plus bicycle.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, I've been out of the game a long time, man.
You know, well, where I got my bike? Obviously, you can go to, you know, Kmart or Walmart or wherever, and you could pick up a $100 bike.
Dude, I buy bikes. If I ever buy a bike, I first I go to the Goodwill. Then I go to the Salvation Army. If I can't find one there, that's when I start hitting up the Craigslist. I am not going to pay more than $100 for a bike, which, you know, probably explains why I don't bike much. You know, you pay $10,000 for a bike, I'll bet you bike a lot.
Well, I have had the pleasure of riding one of those bikes.
Yeah.
They're nice. They are nice. I don't know if they're that nice, but you hop onto it and go, ooh, this is not a normal bicycle. Or, you know, not one that I've ever ridden before.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the brakes work perfectly. The gears, you know, it's just a little flick of the finger and it goes up and down without even trying. You know, just things like that.
Yeah. That's cool. Now that they exist, I want to try it. And that makes the whole $3,500 seem reasonable. Maybe I'll get one of
those
bikes. I'm going to get a Faraday bike, James, right after I get my 4K 50-inch TV.
Love it.
I don't know. And you know what the best part about it is? Like, honestly, if I could afford both of those products, you know what I would buy? A Mac Pro. Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't, and I could actually use the other two products.
Hey, you know what? You could do whatever you want as long as your 401k and IRA are fully maxed out.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't own any of those things. So Friday, we're coming up to the end of the week. Cube sensor. Basically describe it as Fitbit for your home. So if Fitbit quantifies you, your cube sensor quantifies the rest of it. I think these are awesome. I totally want them, like really super bad. Cost a couple hundred bucks, which is why I don't have them. But basically what they do, simply place cube sensors throughout your home. They're these little sensors. Guess what? They're the size of a cubes. They're not very big. One in each room, and get a read on various factors that affect your health and well-being. Specifically, cube sensors are equipped with 7 different sensors measuring air quality, temperature, humidity, noise, light, weather, pressure, and accelerometer. For earthquakes, I don't even get that. A cube sensor can tell you.
If the house is a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
Maybe. The cube sensors can tell the temperature in your home is off, costing you money, or alert you that the office is too dark to be working without a light as the sun starts to go down. Which I don't know. That's like that would be interesting, but
seems
I'm not
a little
sure. I need
protective.
Yeah, exactly. This is cool though. It does tell you about indoor pollution, ensuring the air you breathe in the home is fresh and clear, clean. The idea behind the project comes from consumers growing increasingly interested in data about their own lives, especially where health and fitness are concerned, yet there is no all-encompassing product that monitors the health level of your environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's cool. It's really cool. I like it. They range in price from $300 to $600, which is too much for me. A small pack is 2 cubes with with USB cables, 1 base station with power adapters, and Ethernet cable. Basically, everything you need, but the little base station is like, you know, it doesn't work over Wi-Fi, it works over whatever wireless thing they have. For $300, you get 2 cubes. For $500, you get 4 cubes in the base station.
for $600, you get 6 cubes in the base station.
Wow.
And so I think I need the medium pack. So $450 is what I'm gunning for. 2 rooms, bathroom, kitchen, living room area. Yeah, that would cover. I need the 4 pack. So I want
one. I would just do one and make assumptions for the other rooms.
Yeah, see, but that's why you can't live a quantified life.
Okay.
I have a Fitbit for each wrist, okay, so I can compare.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's cool. I like it. Loomis, they're a company that designs military-grade displays for heads-up display stuff. Basically little screens that work. They're super cool. They don't require, like it's not like the Google Glass, which requires like a big old prism and things. It's like super thin, super sleek looking, really cool technology. They don't have anything really backing it up on the software end, so it's just running a old version of Android. Basically, they're sending it out as a dev kit for hardware. They want people to start using it. Google Glass is getting some attention, and they want to get on that bandwagon. So this looks pretty cool. You know, just kind of you're continuing to be incrementally moving forward with the whole wearables thing. And this was a nice little tech demo on, when Google figures out what they want to do. This is the sort of thing that, as third parties start to get in, and and if Google ever releases a software for Google Glass, this would be perfect, kind of filling out that ecosystem. So, very cool. ZTE, I don't know if you remember us talking about the idea of modular cell phones.
Yes.
Well, ZTE has actually had a piece of a tech demo of a modular cell phone and cool. A smartphone. And yeah, it actually looks kind of cool. If you check it out, it looks really slick. It's a good-looking phone. It's got 2 battery packs. It's got a CPU, and then like if you they've got the breakout with what all these different pieces look like. But they look, you can't call them like memory cards, but they kind of similar in principle, where they're thin, rectangles with corners cut off. But there's a CPU spot, there's a GPU spot, there's a RAM spot, there's a ROM spot. There's a camera spot, all these little spots where all you can pop them in. So as, as time goes on and third parties, come up with better stuff, you can put better RAM in, or you can pop a better GPU or a CPU or better ROM or whatever you want in there, and upgrade it as time goes on. So it's a cool little, basically what it is, it's a modular cell phone. And then they have different backs you can put on it. It looks pretty slick.
Nice. And I like the idea of, depending on what you're doing, you swap in a bigger battery or a bigger camera or, whatever you're doing, you can fit it for that situation.
Yeah, exactly. So you could swap out the GPU and a lower CPU and a bigger battery if you want something that's going to, something that it'll just going to run the basic software. You don't want to play any video games on your long trip, or if you want to play, high power video games. Yeah, it's cool. This one I did for you and for me, Tactus, just over the weekend. They were there. Basically, this is your tactile keyboard. They're one of your leading companies in stuff popping out of your screen. They had a piece of hardware that ran Android that they're showing off, but they also showed off a case that goes onto your iPad that will push up little buttons for the keyboard on your iPad. So it's all your haptic feedback type stuff. They're showing it off, and people seem pretty stoked on it. It doesn't seem really flexible, but the big thing for me is that they are based in Fremont, California,
which is awesome because if you know where I work, it's in Fremont, California, and they basically are like 10 minutes from my work. So I was trying to figure out like an excuse to, you know, want to go say hi to them just because they're at CES, and I think people are interested in their technology. So I might creepily drive by and go like, oh, maybe next time, and then never do. So that was that. And then, I guess finally we'll wrap up with Engadget's top, best of CES 2014 awards. Best startup they gave to Airtime, which are Airtame, those dudes that do the wireless HDMI displays. Best digital health and fitness product was the Jaybird. I didn't talk about it because all it is a, it's just a Fitbit, Jawbone replacement. But Fitbit didn't come out with anything new, so nobody was like stoked on them.
Oh, okay.
It's just another one of those, and I, you know, it's cool. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Best car product, dude. The car stuff. I didn't really get into the car stuff. There's some cool car stuff. Basically, the automated driving stuff. It is like game on. Cool. That was what everybody was showing off. There were a couple other cool things coming on, but it's like the BMW showed their full on, these things drive for you, and they were saying like it's awesome, which is great news because they're like, and one of the big things that everybody's talking about is like it's going to creep in. It's just going to all of a sudden one day we're not going to drive cars anymore. You're not even going to believe that it happened because they basically they've built the whole system, and they're going to slowly bring each of these assistive driving things in until basically the car drives for you, and we're just, you know, they're going to creep in.
That's awesome.
Over the next couple of years. Yeah, it is very cool. That being said, who won the actual best car stuff, best car gadget? Mm-hmm. Corvette with the poor performance data recorder. Basically, you know, your quantified self, man. They were all – the Engadget was all about the quantified self stuff this year. Corvette totally quantifies itself, gives you all the performance information, and displays it beautifully on a tablet. Very cool. I already really want a Corvette, so I want one even more now. Best audio product was the Clearview Clio. Audio products – or, you know, kind of whatever, audio products this year. There was one clever piece of technology, basically a big old piece of glass. They vibrate, and it gives really great sound. Whoa. And that's what this is. The Clearview Clio, literally it's Clearview because you can see right through it. The Clio's combination of innovative ideas and practical application make it our standout audio product from this year. Yeah, I know. There was one cool product that I liked. It's it was a Bluetooth radio that's supposed to go with you, but it literally is spec for spec, and I'm pretty sure it's even the exact same like speaker cones that I'm building my speaker system out of right now, and it costs $100 more than the one that I'm building, which made me feel great because I was like, mine's a Bluetooth, you know, thing. It's like the exact same thing, and it's like it costs less, which is what I was hoping to find out. So that was good. Best video product, Dish Virtual Joey. This was so – I'm not even sure why they have this category. Or I just completely disagree with them, I guess. I don't know what I would say, but this is not it. Its Virtual Joey app is coming first to LG smart TVs and PlayStation consoles and expected to subscribers – what the heck? I don't even...
Next.
Yeah, thank you. Best software, Sony PlayStation Now. I think that should be just the best video game stuff, but they wanted to give that to the Oculus Rift Crystal Cove prototype. It's a very cool prototype, it seems like.
It's true.
I think it might be one of those you had to use it to understand how incredible it was. Because from the outside, it sounds really cool, but I don't get it. Best mobile technology?
Maybe you're doing your neck exercises, you know, build up those neck muscles.
So best mobile technology, the Sony Zipper Compact. The vast majority of small Android smartphones are merely stripped down versions of the flagship counterpart, which means that if you don't like large devices, you typically have to settle for something that's lower quality. Sony is addressing this pain point with the Zipper Z1 Compact, a smaller version of the company's flagship device, and features most of the same powerful components and a 4.3-inch waterproof chassis. So basically, it's an iPhone.
you know.
It's waterproof, though.
I know. It actually sounds really cool. And if I were going to get an Android, that's probably what I would go for. Because I tend to like smaller phones. Best gaming product, Valve Steam Machines.
Cool.
Which weren't, you know, yeah, I want one. I just can't afford one. Best offbeat product, Sense Mother. Mother's product description includes the phrase, the Internet of Things, and its soulless visage gives a serious case of the willies, but it still handily took home top honors for a best offbeat category. Why? Because the smart wireless nesting doll base station and sensor-laden cookies are surprisingly versatile and user-friendly. Rather than picking up multiple modules for different tasks, you can repurpose those tags to monitor everything from distance walk to how many cappuccinos you make in a day. Are there systems like Mother out there? Sure, but most are confusing and really meant for do-it-yourself enthusiasts, not your average consumer. Best kid-friendly product, the Mimo Baby with Intel. Basically the Edison, the one practical application of the Edison. Best maker-friendly technology, guess what? The MakerBot Replicator Desktop 3D Printer, which is, I think it's the coolest of the 3D printers in that it's like, you know, a real serious 3D printer, but it's the least exciting of them. Oh, yeah, I would, yeah. It's the one I am least excited by, but it's the only one I would buy. So I guess that makes sense.
Fair enough.
Best PC, the Razer Project with Christine. The Razer's Project Christine, not with Christine. Yeah, that obviously is the best PC. It looks really cool. No one's going to be able to afford it. And then best of the best. Who won the best, coolest product of 2014? Once again, confirming my suspicion that you had to be there to try it, the Oculus Rift Crystal Cove prototype. You must have had to be there because it's cool. I get why the Oculus Rift is cool. I get it in concept, but I think once you experience it, it has to completely blow your mind because, you know, obviously Engadget and everybody else thinks it's friggin' amazing if you're actually there. Whatever. But that's CES, man. That's the big stuff. Those are the big dogs.
Wow. That was pretty big.
Yeah.
Very cool. It's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah. As you know, and it's funny. I guess if I were to give my big takeaway, you know, 4K is obviously here, and I think unlike 3D, it's the natural progression. So people are gonna, when people go out and buy $1,000 TVs, they're gonna buy 4K TVs, and you know, in a couple of years, 2-3 years, you know, you're gonna have 36-inch 4K, you know, TVs for a couple $600-700, and your 1080p TVs are just gonna go the way of the dinosaurs, and all your monitors are gonna become 4K Ultra HD TVs, and this is where it's gonna go.
And what I understand is that most movies have already been recorded in 4K, you know, whatever, in 4K, we'll say that.
Right.
And so part of it's just a matter of switching over that content on Netflix or whatever,
right,
video on demand, to that, and then eventually the, like you said, sports, ESPN will flip over pretty quick, and then it'll be the other shows, TV shows will start to follow. But just the movies themselves being good enough, you know, they'll start putting them on Blu-rays and stuff like that.
Yeah. So that's very cool. The quantified self, as it were, your smartwatch, health tracker stuff, that's obviously serious business. Nike, Fitbit, and Jawbone have been doing well enough where, you know, big boys are getting into the competition. I think my takeaway on all of this is that if Apple can't do it, it doesn't mean that nobody can't do it, but the technology, the basic technology is obviously there. There's enough different iterations that what you really need to do is you need to now put them together in a package that can be easily sold. You need a really slick-looking, cool-looking watch. Not something that looks like it's a grown-up version of the calculator watch, which is what most of them look like. You need a very cool-looking piece of hardware. It needs to have a ridiculous battery life. and it needs to be useful in that it sends you notifications and it tracks all of your basic health stuff. And if you put those all together with a sales pitch of why it's worth the money, because it'll have to be expensive, I think you could actually really start, quote, the smartwatch revolution. I think the technology is there. I think the hardware is in its different iterations. And what's cool about that is that people will buy that one, and it'll sort of be the one that, you know, everybody believes in, although it won't be – it's the one that'll make people believe that it's possible, and then people will start to go out and find all these other different watches.
I gotcha.
I somebody needs to make wearing a watch cool, and then the rest of these guys are going to sell like mad, I think is what's going to happen. But nobody's made so wearing a watch cool yet.
Waiting for that tipping point still.
Exactly. I think that 3D printers are getting awesome. Like I said, you know, I kind of gave my – the one that I would buy is not the one I'm most excited by. But I think there's a lot to be excited by in that market. Home automation's getting cool, except cost is still a big issue. Everything was like, I want that, but I can't afford it. I think the Cube is the first one where I'm really like, I'd actually consider saving up and paying for that. It's enough of what I want. It's all in one. I like it. But it doesn't integrate with any other apps, which is kind of a – you know, frustrating. It's all of them playing together is really, I think, the clutch technology that people are still trying to figure out. And part of it is just figuring out how to do what they're going to do well before they can integrate with everything else. But I think we're on the way. Nobody was talking about computers. Computers are like seriously old business, dude. Like,
sounds like not just computers, but for the most part, tablets as well.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny. Like I was reading, there were a couple articles about the idea of tablets being the solved problem. People want, you know, people keep coming up with all these different form factors for tablets, and they keep wanting to push Apple. And Apple's perspective of the tablet computer is that the problem has been solved. We don't need to do anything, and it's hard to argue with them when you look at CES, you know, it just kind of what's coming out there. Nobody's really pushing anything new in that market. It's cool. It's very cool. I don't know. It's exciting. I love this kind of, I love this time of year because it just gets you excited about what's coming and all the new, you know, cool hardware that's out there, and you can't necessarily buy anything, but it gets you excited about what you want to buy for Christmas this year or next year or whatever. I don't know. It's neat. It's cool. Cool week. I love it.
Awesome, man. I'm glad that that was a good job. That was a good job. Covering it all. It was very comprehensive. Clearly, a lot happened. We're going to have to figure out how to get you over there one time.
I know. My boss would totally give me the time off for it, too.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Hey, that's awesome, dude. Sweet. So next week you're not necessarily on your own, but you're gonna have a secret guest.
Yeah. What that means just for everybody's health and happiness means probably the show won't get posted till like Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll do my best to get it by Monday, but sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
I'm getting better. This is gonna be my fourth time posting it.
Yeah, something like that. Alright. Cool beans, man.
Yeah, man.
Cool beans. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed this CES review and recap. A lot of cool stuff. Obviously, check out the articles on furloughbros.com if you want to, you know, see specifically more about what it is that we talked about. It'll all be there. Let's see here. My name is James Furlough. My consuming brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time.